Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Kelsey, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Thursday, January 14th, and if Kelsey's here, it means she has not won the Powerball, because I can't believe that you would be here if you had.
I didn't win. Oh,
did you buy a ticket?
I did.
Oh, actually. You did buy a ticket.
I did. And you okay. know, it was so funny, because I went to CVS yesterday to pick up some prescription antibiotics for my sinus infection, and there was just a line out the door for
really?
The little Powerball machine. Yeah, but I will have you know, I would be here either way.
Oh, you would be here anyway. Yeah. Well, you'd have to announce it to the world. But yeah, I wonder what would happen to one's life after winning something like this. You know,
and I don't know.
Apparently, there were three winners, so they have to split their winnings, and of course, that amount that they promise you is for 20 or 30 years, you know, that
right.
they would pay you like yearly or something.
Right. I mean, it's not like you get this massive lump sum.
Exactly.
I mean, it is massive still, but.
Right, exactly. But not that $1.5 billion.
Right.
That you have to really be the only winner and be paid that over 30 years. So what they end up with then, the three winners are $187 million each,
mm-hmm.
and but there's no income tax on that, or no state tax, so they only have to pay the 40% to the government. But so yeah, they're left with $187 million, which is not
is that that's after taxes?
No, actually that no, so they'll have to pay 40% of that. You know, so you're looking at about $100 million that you have left.
Well, that doesn't sound as exciting.
Yeah, I know, but you know what?
I still take it.
It's more than a lot of companies are worth, you know?
That's true.
Yeah, so that's amazing. That's still a lot of money to have that in cash.
Yeah. You know, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, like you wouldn't take it, right?
I would totally take it. But I'm just saying.
No, I know, I know. So congratulations to the winners, I guess. You know, what can I say? People look happy. And we,
it's so exciting.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's totally life-changing, big time.
Right, for better or worse, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Hopefully they'll make it for the better.
Yeah.
Where were the winners from? I didn't watch.
Oh, I just closed that page. But there were, well, ones were from California, Chino Hills.
Oh, great.
Another one was from Tennessee, and another one was from Florida.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so all over the place. And, yeah, a lot of people. Did you hear about these people on Facebook? They were like, they did a pool of, I don't know how many people they were, but they bought $75,000 worth of tickets.
Oh, my gosh, no.
Yeah, and nobody won there.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
See, it always happens like that.
Yeah, right.
And then it's like the person that buys one,
right,
wins.
Because it's if you're supposed to win, you only need one
that's
ticket.
That's so
you
true.
Know what I mean? Because yeah. it's so like it so has to do with luck, you know.
Oh,
and it has
totally.
To something to do with your like journey in life or something where this is supposed to happen to you or something. You
right,
know?
Fate.
Yeah, exactly. Fate. You know.
I know. Yeah, that's a bummer for them, though. Goodness.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, they tried.
Yeah.
For that amount, anybody would try anything, you know.
Right. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
I know. So in a few minutes, we have a guest waiting here. We're going to get to her in a couple minutes, and we're going to have an interesting show.
We are. So the topic sounds, is pretty cool.
Yeah, so it's going to be cool, and we'll tease it a little bit. We won't tell you what it's about.
Yeah, you guys have to hang around and listen.
Right.
It's worth it, I promise.
Exactly. It's not about sex, but still is interesting. So there you go.
I know. We've been on that topic a lot lately.
We have?
We have.
Really?
Yeah,
I haven't
so.
Noticed. I don't know.
Well,
sure
let's see.
That?
We have. Let's see. We had our sex addiction guy.
Right.
And then,
but we were, that's not like sex talk so much, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the negative side of it, I guess.
Right. And then, you know, we had our relationship expert.
That's true.
A few
yeah.
shows ago.
Okay. Well, that's cool. So we're due for a porn star or something. You
know? Oh my gosh.
To
we
really
are.
Open up the discussion.
Oh my gosh. I'm sure they would have a very different take on it.
They're different. They're different, let me tell you. But at any rate, just a couple things in the news. I guess Nick Carter from the Backstreet Boys was charged with battery in Key West. You know who he is?
I saw that, yes.
Yeah. And that's interesting because he was with a friend. They went into a bar and they were already intoxicated, so they wouldn't serve them
right.
and asked them to leave. So they asked to leave. They were asked to leave. They went outside and then they started fighting with a bouncer, I guess.
Mm.
So... So there's another example of alcohol really screwing you up, man. They need to mellow out and smoke some pot. You know, if they have to do something, let them do something cool, you know, and calming and not.
I know. You know, alcohol is a funny thing because looking back on my life, my short life so far, and everything, when I look at the things I regret and. You know, the things that I wish I hadn't done or maybe could have been better, a lot of it revolved around alcohol.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So you used to drink a lot?
No, not a lot.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I didn't have like a drink. I've never had a drinking problem or anything. But, you know, just when you do something kind of stupid and you're in college and you're, you know, you think, oh, gosh. the vast majority of the things, the stupid things that I have done have revolved around alcohol. So,
okay. Well,
yeah.
That makes sense. You know,
it does. I mean, I think most people, honestly,
yeah.
say the same thing.
Yeah. It makes you stupid. Some people, not yeah. you specifically, but people that drink, you know.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think it's good to kind of realize that.
Yeah, exactly.
And just be aware.
Yeah.
Just be more aware. And a lot of that is just kind of part of growing up. I mean,
yeah.
You know.
I mean, look, when you're young and you do these silly things, fine, you know. But
it's like you're young. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but he's what, like 27 already or something?
Oh,
I think he's even older
than that.
Yeah. Oh, he's 35. You're
yeah.
right. Yeah, I guess his friend was 27. But, yeah, wow, he's 35 already.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of time went by because I remember when my daughter was real little, she loved him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was some time ago, huh?
I bet he's wishing he was still 27.
Yeah, huh? Yeah, I'm figuring it out. If let's say she was like 5 or 6, then he was like, what, 15, 16 when they started?
Oh, yes.
Really?
I mean, they were really young.
Yeah.
Really
wow.
young. I mean, he's still young, don't get me wrong. But,
yeah, well, at 35, you know, he should have more responsibility,
I agree. I think, you know, it's so funny. I believe it was Thanksgiving or Christmas or something. My cousins and I were talking about, you know, when it stops being acceptable to be completely intoxicated. And we figure that, like, your early 20s, okay, and then... You know, we gave it a break and just said, all of your 20s, it's okay. But
yeah,
I happen to think that, like, past about 25, you
yeah.
should, you know, kind of start being more aware
yeah,
of yourself.
Yeah, drinking responsibly, at least.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, you should always drink responsibly. Don't get me wrong. But when does it become unacceptable,
right.
I guess? And I tend to think, you know, by the time you're in your late 20s, you should have started to kind of figure it out. But who am I to judge? Everybody's different.
Yeah.
Everyone grows at a different pace emotionally.
That's true, yeah.
So, you know.
I just, like, you know, I'm not crazy about alcohol, you know, and so I'm glad I don't have that problem. And but I just think it brings out the worst in people when they drink too much, you know? I mean, there's nothing... I mean, look, when I go out social drinking and stuff, that's fine. But I don't drink to get drunk, you know?
Right. That's when it becomes a problem. And you know what's funny is I always think that alcohol brings out the true person.
Yeah.
Which, so...
You think so, though?
I do. I could be very well wrong. This is by no means scientific.
Yeah.
This is just observational conclusion. but it's just kind of been my observation.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm a super nice drunk. Like, I'm really, really nice. And I'm hugging everybody. I'm kissing everybody. It gets me in trouble, you know. but... And, you know, I'm a really nice person in general. And,
yeah.
you know, I feel like the people who are angry drunks or mean drunks, they usually have that mean streak in them somewhere.
True,
and
right?
you should, even if you've never seen it when they're not drinking, like, you should beware because it's there.
Yeah. Because you don't get like mean and crazy and
no.
things like that.
Oh, yeah. No.
So you're right. It probably has to do with the foundation of your personality.
I think so.
Of who you are, yeah.
That's kind of my theory. I don't know if there's any truth to it, but
makes sense to me. I don't know, you know.
It does, yeah. So yeah. That's always been my philosophy. Stay away from the mean drunks.
Right, exactly.
They can't be that good sober.
Right. And that's true because it's usually men that get violent and stuff when they drink, you know. So
usually.
Maybe it does bring out the real person.
I don't know. Sometimes women get rude or mean or whatever as well. So
that's true. I haven't seen a lot of that. But
me neither. It's usually men.
You know, do the craziest things, you know.
Yeah.
Women are a little more responsible.
Typically, yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are lots of really nice guy drunks. It's funny how alcohol works.
Yeah.
But it's just like any other drug, which is really perplexing.
Yeah, huh?
That it's not on the same radar as a lot of them, but it has similar effects.
Whoa.
For sure.
Yeah. Oh, well. One last thing is, I don't know if you heard about this death in Italy of this young American woman. She's 35 years old. She's an artist living in Florence, and she was found dead, strangled in her apartment a couple of days ago.
I didn't hear that.
So they now caught this guy whom apparently she met at a club, and they went home and had consensual sex. So they found his DNA everywhere.
Yeah.
And they're saying that it's probably him because nobody else was in the room at the time. And so forth. So he is an illegal immigrant from Senegal. And
here we go again with this.
Yeah, you know. So I don't know what's going on, but not good news. I'm feeling bad for them, you know.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Hopefully they will get justice for that.
Yeah, I know. It's like you go to a foreign country and you find your death there, you know. How depressing.
I know. My little sister Brooke actually went to go study abroad in Paris. Uh-huh. And, you know, it was before all the terrorist attacks and everything. But, yeah, I mean, I was kind of scared that she was going over there because it is a lot different than America. Of course, she was totally safe. She was with, you know, a university group and everything. But I was still a little jittery about it.
Right.
Because I'm not familiar with it. It's uncharted territory for me. And I'm comfortable in America. I like my little American bubble.
Exactly. I like it too. You know, I mean, and I love to travel, but every time I travel, I look forward to coming back here, you know.
Likewise.
Because life is so much easier here. Right?
You really learn to appreciate it, actually, whenever you do venture out.
That's true. You do.
I mean, I went to Europe to visit her, actually, while she was studying abroad. Mm. So we stayed in Paris for about a week, and then we took the underground fast train, which was really cool, to Paris for 4 days.
Uh-huh.
Or no, to London.
To London, you mean.
Yeah, London, I mean. Sorry.
Yeah, from Paris.
Paris to London.
Right.
And I actually preferred London to Paris.
Yeah.
Which is funny because Paris is so romanticized, but in reality, I found it kind of a little dirty and grungy. But it was pretty. There were parts of it that were gorgeous, but London, I really liked. And, you know, the common language is always nice. So I think that it was really nice to get back to that.
Yeah.
But,
and I think the Brits are more welcoming to Americans.
Oh, my gosh. You know? They definitely are. Yeah. But I just couldn't wait to get back to the States because it's just the conveniences.
Exactly. You know, I mean, you go there to a hotel. Well, most of them are really old
and small
and smelly and everything.
Their hotel standards are not up to par.
No,
I can
they're
tell
not.
You that.
Because everything is so old there, you know. That's the problem.
Right.
So you have like plumbing problems and all that stuff, you know.
Right. No, it's funny because my dad is 6'5".
Wow.
And he didn't take the trip with us because he had to run the businesses and everything. But we told him when we got back it's probably best because he would have just been miserable, like, on all of the buses.
Really?
And in the hotel. Yeah, because everything's just made
for shorter
significantly
people.
Smaller people.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, Americans are pretty tall. All right, well, this is it as far as things in the news, and we're going to get to our guest now. We have Dr. Lillian Glass in the studio. Welcome to the show, Lillian.
So glad to be here.
Thank you. And we're going to be talking about body language today
and
behavior and so forth. You're currently promoting your new book, What's it called?
Body Language of Terrorists. And I wrote it with an FBI, a former FBI special agent named D. Vincent Sullivan, who was also the head of the Behavioral Analysis Unit in Quantico at the FBI, and also he was a member of the Joint Terrorist Task Force in New York. So we joined forces to write this book that can really save people's lives.
Wow. And so what's your background? Have you been working with body language for a while?
Yeah, for a long time.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I worked a lot. I started out working in Hollywood with different actors and actresses. Teaching teaching them body language and voice for different roles, from Will Smith, the movie 7 Pounds. Worked with Dustin Hoffman. You name it. I've worked with them. And that was
Because actors have to have a certain body language to present the character, right?
Exactly.
So we worked with that. And then I started doing a lot of the political analysis. People would call me during elections, and I do the body language analysis.
Really?
And now I do the body language analysis professionally as a jury consultant. So I help people find the right juries. I help people into the right body language when they have to be in front of a jury and have to go into court. So I do that now.
Right.
And then I analyze surveillance tapes and do a lot of things with regard to criminal and civil cases with body language.
Really?
Yeah.
And now you start getting more into terrorists and things like that, because it's more like present now in our lives.
Yes.
And so the book is Body Language of Terrorists. Protect yourself and those around you by spotting signals that identify potential threats. That's a tall order.
That's a big title. It is.
So, so we'll get to the book in just a moment. You've written other books as well and stuff. If you guys want to follow us, you can go to drlillianglass.com. That's drlillianglass.com, pretty much the way it sounds. And you can find out about the things that she does, about the books and so forth. So, how long have you been writing books?
Oh, many years. Decades.
Really?
Decades. Wow. Got about 18 books out. Yeah.
Wow.
And so, you know, the Body Language of Liars, Body Language Advantage. I've written a bestseller book called Toxic People, Dealing with People Who Make Your Life Miserable.
Oh.
That's all over the world. That's really helped a lot of people.
That would be advantageous for many people.
It is.
Are toxic people?
Toxic people are people who don't support you, who make your life miserable.
Bad energy.
Yeah. Who just, you know, everybody has somebody in their life that just doesn't make you feel good. And how I got into this book was in my private practice, I would sit and listen to people's stories. And I started making a list of, okay, today somebody's going to talk about the bully. Some day's going to control freak. So I came up with 30 types of toxic terrors.
Really?
And and then I started giving advice. Like, okay, this is what you do. You give them, you mirror the person, and it would work.
Right. So they would get a taste of their own medicine, kind of.
That was one technique. Then you could use a humor technique. Then, depending on the person, they may need a pat on the back, which is more important for them than a kick in the pants. So maybe the love and kindness technique. Mm. So I used all these different methods, and it worked.
Really?
Yeah, because many times people say, there's a talk. I just forget about them and go my merry way. Yeah, but in the middle of the night, you're thinking about them and you're going, what do I do?
And they suck all your energy out, right?
And the book is so amazing because it's been around since 1995.
Really?
And people have written me all over the world, and it's still, you know, a bestseller to today, and it's just amazing. And now we have it on ebook and available, but people and on audio. But people have, it's just changed people's lives. I mean, because it gives you freedom that you have choices and you know what to do. So it's great. That was a great book.
So cool. So so you've been practicing psychology,
communication. Uh-huh. Disorders, communication, doing many different things and helping people throughout the years, going into different incarnations of what I do.
Yeah.
So can you sit, have you ever been asked to sit in on like court cases and things like that?
Yeah.
Oh,
that's
my
what
gosh.
I do. Yeah.
Oh, gosh,
that's
how
what I do,
stressful,
and analyze
though.
What's going on. Not really. And well, I've been an expert witness. That is stressful.
I was going to say, yes.
That's like having all of your skin removed and being completely naked and flailed.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's
tough. Have you done any high profile ones?
Yeah.
Anything?
But
you probably can't say.
No, not at this point.
That's
but,
okay.
But I've done a lot of cases, and where I'll sit a lot of times in the courtroom, and I'll help the attorneys tell what's going on with the jury. You know, you better, you know, try to go in this direction or that direction.
So you primarily handle the jury, not the actual defendant.
No, I do. I handle the actual defendant in training them. In fact, tomorrow I'm working with a case where I'm helping the gentleman be more likable to the jury. This is an amazing story. A few years ago, I worked with a man who had a very serious case, a very real case, and it was a discrimination, and he was abused by some people, and he was unjustly treated, and they did a mock jury, and he got no money. You know, I worked with him. $33 million later. So I'm real good at what I do.
Yeah, well,
so that's what
you
know, because it's knowing how people react and how people react to certain things that people do, and it's been very successful.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So how did you come into that? At what point in your life did you decide I'm going to get into body language?
Well, it was it's interesting. It just kind of happened. You know, it's because I was really good at it. You know, to reading people, and as I said, with the politicians, and then people started calling me for different TV shows to do it. So I didn't say, okay, I'm going to be a body language expert. It just kind of, you know, kind of like, you know, how people's lives, they end up in places and you go, oh, I guess that's meant to be. Right. But it was something that I was always aware of, you know, as a child. My father, rest his soul, he was just amazing in terms of how he raised me with regard to being aware of my surroundings. And we would go to a movie and he would say, okay, what was the name of that character in the movie? And I go, okay. And then he said, I'll buy you a present if you can tell me. So I was really vigilant, you know, at 5-6 years old. You know, what does this smell remind you of? Now, I couldn't say oranges. I had to say Tangelo orange, the type of orange. So was so precise. And bless his heart, when I used to go, oh, gosh, there he goes again. And then when I took my Miller analogy test to get into grad school, I got in the 99th percentile.
Wow.
And I went, thank you, Dad. Thank
so
you.
He kept you on your toes.
Yes,
all the
yes,
time.
And that I think that's how you can really raise an intelligent child. Not that you know. Well, yes,
you are smart. Yeah,
but the issue is it comes from training, and I think every parent should really try that technique with their child, no matter what age. Because okay, what was that? What tell me? And it makes you just a critical thinker, an analytical thinker. If this is to this, and this is to this, then this is to this, and then you figure things out.
I see. Wow, very interesting stuff.
Interesting.
But you did get into psychology consciously,
I got it,
right?
I started out as in speech communication, speech pathology. I worked a lot with severely deformed people, like, you know, the movie Elephant Man. That was, I work with people like that. Did you see the movie Rocky with Cher? It was not Rocky. It was, his name was Rocky Dennis. It was called Mask.
Okay,
with
yes,
Cher. That was my real patient because I did a postdoctorate at UCLA.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah, School of Medicine. So I did a postdoctorate in medical genetics. You know, it may seem obscure, but it actually relates a lot to body language because I really got my chops there and how to analyze people from head to toe and really look at people and look at speech. And my element was to look at speech problems with people with different genetic diseases and published in medical journals when I was real young and New England Journal of Medicine. So, you know, I was going for an academic career.
Right.
And one day a doctor said to me at the hospital, he says, you know, I have a patient for you. I said, well, I don't have a practice. He goes, well, you do now. So he let me use one of his offices on the weekends, and it just mushroomed. I guess you treat people nice, and then they recommend three people. And then I started working with the celebrity element, and they were great because, you know, I would help them with their roles, accents, dialects, everything. And it just mushroomed. So that whole area of communication. And then from that, it evolved. Yeah. Now, I tell you, I just graduated last Friday. I became a mediator as well.
Oh, wow.
So I just got a specialty in divorce and family mediation.
Oh,
so now legally I can also mediate. So I really believe in life. You know, you just can't do one thing. You have to kind of explore where, you know, it goes, and something leads you there. And then
that would be a drama filled job.
It's fascinating.
Oh, gosh.
It's fascinating. And, you know, that kind of came about very amazing, you know, unusually, because I, as I said, I believe that, you know, something happens to you and then you don't just sit there and dwell on it. You do something about it.
Right.
So what happened is, you know, I wrote the book Toxic People. So basically how to deal with people, people who make your life miserable. So I knew how to counsel people in my practice. That's what I did a lot, is kind of mediate anyway.
Right.
With people, they have a problem with their daughter or their son, they'd come to see me. And then, so I was doing it, and then all the talk shows I used to do, you know, helping people get their relationships together. And then one day, I was giving a lecture in Mexico, and I wanted to bring my books to Mexico. And I noticed that there was a book called Toxic People. Well, oh, wait a minute. I wrote a book named Toxic People. I took the book. I bought the other person's book. They copied seven. They took seven of my books, copied together. Luckily, we caught them, and they did some word-to-word copying, and they named their book Toxic People. So needless to say, and they wouldn't settle in this court case. No.
That is insane.
So, no, it was just disgusting. So and then my ironically, the publisher that I had at the time, that's why I self-publish a lot of them now, because when you deal with these publishing companies. So I dealt with this publishing company. They were on her side. They happened to be my publisher too, because, you know, they made a mistake, so they're going to try to fight it.
Right.
So anyway,
they published hers as well.
Yes, and they refused to settle. So anyway, what happened was, I'm in federal court. Me in federal court, where they're criminals, and me, Lillian Glass, and I'm sitting there, and I'm going. Before federal court, they have you mediate. They say, I'd like you to go see a mediator. So I see this mediator, and he's so awful. He's awful. He's telling me, you're going to lose this case. You're going to be horrible. Forget it. You should, you know, drop it. You know, whose side are you on? And I hated this guy. I hated him.
What a positive person.
He was a horrible person, toxic person. And I thought, if that guy so crap. And then anyways, I went to court, and here I am in this courtroom, and I won this case, and it was just amazing. And I thought, you know, that crappy mediator, if he's so bad, I could be a mediator. I could certainly try. So I went to school at Pepperdine and got a certificate in mediation legally. And then I thought, well, you know what? I had some friends that were going to go through a divorce, and I mediated their potential divorce, and it stopped. They don't have a divorce anymore.
Now they're
So I said, hey, wait a minute, I'm good at this. So I went to school, back to Pepperdine, and got a certification in divorce and family mediation.
Wow. So you're very ambitious. Yeah, I mean, you like to do things.
It's not ambitious. Ooh. It's kind of like taking life and seeing where the road is and where the need is, and making you feel good and making others feel good. And I think it's like being of service to people in a way that I can help people.
Yeah.
And having fun. And you know, like what you do. I mean, you're awesome too.
So. Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, for those of you just joining us, we're talking to Dr. Lillian Glass, First Lady of Communication. is what your website says.
Oh, God.
That's so cute.
We have to change that. Some journalists put that on there before.
That is so cute.
But a body language expert, communications consultant. So she knows what she's talking about. She's here to promote the book Body Language of Terrorists, and we'll get to that in just a moment. I wanted to ask you, are you originally from L.A.?
No, I'm from Miami.
Oh, from Miami.
I used to call Miami.
So,
and then went to school in the Midwest.
You did?
Mm-hmm. That's why you say bless your heart.
Bless your heart, yeah.
My mom says that all the time.
Yeah.
And
really?
I never noticed it until
I'm dating myself.
Until I moved out to L.A. and realized that not everybody says that.
So, and what made you decide to come to L.A.?
Well, I went to Illinois for my undergraduate, Bradley University. I got a master's at the University of Michigan and a PhD at the University of Minnesota. And then I came here to California to do a postdoctorate in medical genetics, where I was the only PhD in an MD program. And my responsibility was to study speech and hearing problems with people with different genetic diseases. Like I mentioned, elephant man disease and the fellow in mask and, you know, severe deformities, dwarfism, a lot of problems with that. And then I, you know, started the practice kind of by accident, because I was planning to be a professor somewhere. And it just never happened. I actually was a professor at USC for a while.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then, you know, was making more money in private practice than as a professor.
So you had to, ditch it.
And I was enjoying the private practice so much better than the academic politics. So.
Right.
Yeah. True. So when you see people, you're able to read their body language.
Yeah.
What are some of the things that... Let me ask you this. So you probably can help people with like dating and things
like that too, right? A lot. In fact, I wrote a book called, you know, He Says, She Says about communication and relationships. And oh, absolutely. And when you, and in fact, in the book Body Language Advantage, it has a whole section on that. Yeah, because when you're dating someone, you know, you don't know what you're doing a lot of times. But if you can read them, you get what the story is.
That's true. Or if you just, before you meet them even, you know.
Yeah, on the phone, you know, or
or in the bar or something, wherever you are, you want to know that they're interested.
Absolutely.
Right? So what are some of the cues that somebody can know? Let's say a man goes into a bar. He really likes this woman.
Sounds like a joke.
Or in a club or something.
Yeah, I know, right?
Man
walks
into a bar.
Yeah.
A guy walks into a bar.
Uh-huh. And he sees a woman he likes. How, you know, he wants to approach her and he doesn't know whether she's interested or not.
Okay. Well, first of all, she doesn't know if she's interested or not, so he has to go up there and take a chance and watch how and communicate with her. And don't say something corny or stupid, but just something, you know, genuine that comes from the heart.
Right, but I mean, that's what everybody says, but it's like you figure she's probably heard everything, no matter what I say, you know. So it's like you're preoccupied with what something original can I come up with. And
just go by her. Just go by her looks. Like, for example, if you're talking to your co-host here, and you see her, and she's got these awesome dimples and beautiful eyelashes. You say, you know, I'm sure people have told you have beautiful smile. You have great, you know, just something
but
that she
but
knows.
But that sounds corny. I
sounds real. But I mean, you know, it's like if you felt. I say, oh, are you okay? And then she says, yeah. Why? Oh, I thought you dropped when you fell from heaven. You know, that's corny.
God. Yeah,
that's what we're talking about. But if you give a genuine compliment, because a compliment is a key that unlocks the door.
Right. And but it's also too obvious for me. You know, that's what I'm saying.
For you, but not. Yeah. Okay, so give her a compliment. Just give her a compliment. Just give her any compliment.
Well, she's always.
No. Look at her and just give her a compliment.
You're always a very happy person. You're always smiling.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's great because she reacted to that genuinely. Now, give her a compliment that you really wouldn't really believe. Like that, you know, it's not really about her, but just a compliment.
I don't know. You put me on the spot. I don't know.
Well, no, just like you'd say.
But you're very blonde.
You know, okay, well, that's, and she's laughing. You know, she goes, oh, yeah, right.
Yeah.
You know, so again, or you'd say, oh, my gosh, that's high fashion you're wearing, you know, and she's just wearing a really casual outfit. So that's what we're talking about. It's really being genuine. So but that's the least of your problems.
Right.
After you communicate, you've got to know, are they into what I'm saying? Are they looking at you? If they're looking away, they're not into you.
Yeah,
if they're not leaning in towards you, they're not into you.
Right.
If they're not touching you, sometimes, you know, if they're really into you, they will be touching your hand or whatever.
Yeah.
And if you're communicating with them and they're not responding, over.
Yeah,
also, look at their feet. Feet are very important.
Really?
The toes. If their toes are not pointing in your direction...
I've heard that.
Yeah, very important.
Oh my gosh.
If they're looking away, if their body's leaned away or blocking you, like literally the cold shoulder, not into you.
Yeah.
So you see these things, these little cues, and you can pick it up. Also, you may be having a conversation and something you've said may have turned them off. And you look at that, say, "Oh, what didn't you like about what I said before?" Oh, okay, you know, so they know you're sensitive.
Right.
So that kind of stuff. So it can help you to a great extent.
Yeah, obviously, you know, because you can read, you know, possibly what they're feeling before you ever talk to them or anything.
Absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. And you could watch them. You could see their baseline. How are they with other people?
Right.
You know, they may be preoccupied. They may have something on their mind. They may be going out because they're getting a divorce and they just want to get their mind off of stuff. So everybody has a story.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's like, how are you interacting with them? And maybe you could be Prince Charming and they, you know, they're still into their own stuff. So they may not get you. So you want to... You know, repeatedly, or say you know, if you'd like to get together sometime, or it seems like you're preoccupied.
Yeah, very cool. So Lillian wrote the book Body Language of Terrorists, and you wrote this along with Vincent Sullivan.
Yes.
How did you guys meet?
Well, he called me one day and he said, "I'd like you to give a lecture to the behavioral analysis program at the FBI.
The FBI.
Yeah. So that's how I met him.
Really?
Yeah,
and then you guys eventually and then decided.
We connected. We had such a good rapport. Uh-huh. And we really had saw the world from very similar eyes.
Wow.
And so we decided to come up with this book.
Right.
So basically, how this book can help people in a terrorist attack type of situation.
Yeah.
So what are some of the cues people can look
for to try to
stay safe?
You know, it's interesting because, you know, we're hearing this from all of our politicians in the debate. Be vigilant. The president is saying, be vigilant. But what do you be vigilant about? What
right.
are you supposed to?
Details.
What are you going to look at? You know, yeah, I'm vigilant. Okay, here I am. There's a terrorist. What do I
do?
But the key is to look at certain signs. So we did some major research. So we studied terrorist videos, hours and hours of video analysis and pictures of people who actually committed terrorist acts. And we saw a pattern starting to happen.
Wow.
One pattern we saw is single file. Terrorists tend to walk in single file, even if they're two terrorists.
Really?
The Tsarnaev brothers from the Boston bombing, they're walking right in back of each other.
Oh.
And what they do is they do single file walking because they want to show they're not together. It's counterintuitive. And even if they think, oh, well, we should be walking side by side, they end up walking in back of each other.
Wow.
We saw it with the Mumbai bombers. We saw it with the 9/11 terrorists. We see it with many terrorist groups. So that's one thing. And in fact, one of the major airports, a security guard noticed a group of men walking in single file, and he thwarted a terrorist attack. So that was amazing.
Oh, how awesome.
Yeah. A lot of times they'll wear multiple clothing and a lot of layers when it's not really, it may be cool outside, but not, you know, for a, you know, major Arctic Circle jacket, you know.
Yeah.
So a lot
right.
of them with the hood. So they'll wear a lot of clothing
what's
to hide their
yeah. What's their, the meaning behind that? Why do they do that?
To hide their weaponry.
Sure.
And so that could be, you know, we saw this even with the Columbine, those boys that shot up their fellow students. They're wearing those long coats to hide their ammunition.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of them will do that. We also see people that when they'll be patting themselves, you know, they'll be unusual. And
But
nobody's more brilliant at this than the Israelis. I mean, they are awesome. And they could pick
you
anything
mean profiling
up.
Oh,
nothing,
like
nothing's
yeah.
better.
Right.
And, you know, we've been
reviewing
a lot
to.
Of Israelis.
Because they have to. It's out of necessity,
you know,
right?
You can't. And so, you know, you see people patting themselves down, you know, or like, you know, you're always, if you wear a weapon, there is a body language that you do. And you always have your hand by your side or you're touching yourself. In fact, I just did a thing for the news about Putin, because Putin has kind of what he calls the gunslinger body language. So
really?
He's armed.
Does he always
know that?
He
know
carries?
That.
Oh,
yeah,
my
he
gosh.
Does. And so we see that when you're dealing with this type of behavior, they may, you know, touch their stomach. One thing is, with the Israelis, going back to that, there was one woman who was she was wearing a black abaya, and she was walking down, and she was allegedly pregnant and holding, you know, her stomach, and something wasn't right. One of the Israeli officers says, something isn't right. He says, because my sister's pregnant, and when she walks like this.
Yeah,
and
like,
friends
like
of mine, and they walk like a pig. So wait a minute, you don't walk with one leg in front of the other. It's not natural.
Yeah, no.
Because it has to, you have to balance to not drop your child, your potential child. So, and they caught her, and she had a lot of weapons.
Really?
Yeah. And there have been a lot of people that have saved the day because they noticed. We noticed also there are four types of emotional states that terrorists go through. They're either numb. A lot of times terrorists don't want to be terrorists. You know, they're given drugs. They're put in altered
really?
States. Yes.
I didn't know.
Oh, yeah. And we've seen this with the last will and testament tapes. It was really heartbreaking. You think, oh, terrorists, why should you have any feelings? But when you really see how they're manipulated, this one fellow, Jarir, it was when the 9/11 terrorists, he was reading his 9/11, or he was reading his last will and testament, and you see all of a sudden, oh my God, this is a reality. I didn't plan for this. You know, it was just like rhetoric. We were just talking about, oh, and you see all of a sudden he starts scratching at himself. And we show pictures of this in the book. He's got cotton mouth. He's freaked out. Most of them are freaked out because, you know, and then we did some of the industry where we looked at the terrorists, the actually suicide bombers. It's not pleasant, but we did it. We looked at the dead bodies. and we saw that most of them have smiles on their faces, or, you know, that we observed.
What?
And, you know, especially the Jamia Islamia, this terrorist group, that the Bali bombers, and these fellows were smiling at their execution. Mm. And it's fascinating to see that. So when you look at this type of behavior, and then if you see somebody with a mask-like appearance, in San Bernardino recently, the survivors said, we noticed that there was extreme agitation, extreme nervousness before they committed their terrorist act. And that's one of the things. If you see somebody like that, run. Just get out of their run, because that it can be a very big danger sign.
Yeah.
You know, you saw it with the Mumbai bombers. You know, they were smiling. They were, you know, had extraneous movements, mask-like movements.
Why did they do
because,
that?
Because of the drugs that they were given, and they're just in an altered state. So it's fascinating. The when you see somebody sweating profusely that shouldn't be sweating, that's another thing. Yeah. A lot of people think, well, wait a minute, you've written a book and it could really get into the wrong hands.
Yeah, yeah.
But it can't, and I'll tell you why. Because the body doesn't lie. It does things that you have no control
over.
It's
like you could read the book a million times.
You can read, so, okay, we will not run in single fire. Yeah. We will not. But when you're going to be doing something nefarious, when you're something, you come out. What goes on in your head and your heart comes out in your brain.
Yeah. No, that's true. I mean, I sometimes it's funny, but sometimes I find myself when I'm like in security lines and stuff, especially in Israel, because, you know, they really check you out, everything about you, right? I feel like, suddenly I feel like I have to control my body language so they don't suspect me or something, right?
But
you
can't.
Because you can't. And you don't know what they expect and what they don't expect, you know? And I probably look nervous just because I'm trying to look not nervous.
Exactly.
I think they get that. Yeah, I think they're looking for other things. Yeah. You know, they're so smart. And, you know, in our country, we say, did anybody pack your bags? And they don't even look at you. Mm. You know, did anybody pack your bags? Did you? Okay, bye here. You know, nobody's
connected. They believe
Israel,
you.
When they say, did anybody, they're looking at you. Did you pack it? It's not the question. It's how you react to the question.
That's true.
Did anybody pack your bags? No, I didn't. You know, or if you're arrogant or you're belligerent. And, you know, it's interesting. There were some people that have thwarted terrorist attacks. One woman, she was a customs officer, and she noticed that this one guy, he was, you know, arrogant and very nervous and very, you know, something was off about him. And he was sweating profusely. And it turned out she save the day, because he had some major ammunition and he was going to, you know, blow everything up. We talk about that in the book.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
You know, the guy who we have to thank for taking off our shoes at the airport, Richard Reed, the day before, one of the ticket agents did not like him. They wouldn't let him on the flight. They felt something was off. He smelled bad. He wasn't dressed well. He was off. Just something was, it just made the hair on the
fellow's
hand.
Get intuition.
Yeah. And he flew the next day, and we all know what happened. But that day before, he did not fly because he wasn't allowed to. So, you know, we see things, and that's so good you brought up intuition, because people, what is intuition? It's what you see, it's what you hear, and in the middle of your brain, it's called a limbic system. It analyzes it and goes, something's not right. Some fight or flight. That's how we were survived as a species. It's how animals survive. So we see these things, and it's so important. And that's why with this book, you know, it tells you so many different tells that you can look at, and it can really change your life.
Right.
It's so interesting.
The book is Body Language of Terrorists, and the writer is Lillian Glass, and your co-writer is Vincent Sullivan. Is he still in the FBI?
No, he retired.
He's retired already, right.
Yeah, and, you know, we're working on this book, and we're going to be lecturing together to different police organizations. And the FBI actually has copies of this book.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Different police organizations do as well. So we're really going to try to get it to people, not just the police, but, you know, publicly. And that's kind of our mission.
Right, because the more people who are aware of these traits to look for, the better it's going to be. I mean, we can't just rely on, you know, officers.
So. No, in fact, that's what Vince, if he was here, he would encourage that. He said, you know, most of the, in fact, a lot of the crimes at the FBI, they were aware of it because of the public. Mm-hmm. The public is their right hand, and we have to be aware.
And, you know, it's so touchy. Everyone's like, oh, don't profile.
Oh,
well, you know what? If your mom dies, your dad dies in a terrorist attack, I bet you would have wished somebody would have profiled.
Yes, yeah. And let's talk about profiling for a minute.
Because right, and I was going to ask you about it because it probably makes your book controversial.
Very.
Right?
Yes, and because, people freak out.
Yeah, because people are like, oh, you're singling out certain people.
Yes.
But how else are you going to do it?
Well, but first of all, this is one of the things we stress in the book. You can't. We have a chapter on the pros and the cons of profiling. But you cannot just profile because somebody is Muslim or somebody is, you know, of a certain ethnic group. No
right.
way. In fact, we did a study where we took different mugshots of different people committing different crimes, and we put 30 of these people together and asked them, okay, now who's the terrorist? Nobody. And we looked at thousands of people, got it right.
Really?
There are terrorists that look just like me, tall, yeah. blonde, many terrorists. Right. In fact, Jihad Jane and Jihad Jamie look just like me.
Oh.
Not just like me. I'm not a terrorist, but no, they look similar. There are terrorists that are black. You know, we see this a lot in Minnesota, the Somalians. There's one terrorist. He's in prison right now. He looks like Brad Pitt, and you'll see it in the book, Mr. Boyd. And we see terrorists that are Latino. We see terrorists that are Asian from,
right.
you know,
Indonesia. So they don't have to look
no,
like a Muslim.
No.
Yeah.
And in fact, that's just, you know, a percentage. You know, we're not really, we're looking at people, you know, they're white Anglo-Saxon males that are terrorists.
Right.
So again, you cannot profile based on one's ethnic group at all. Now, if you hear somebody of a certain ethnic group going through all the rhetoric, like Nidal Hassan, the Fort Hood bomber, then you kind of, you know, think twice about it and go, you know, that's let me report that. And unfortunately, they did report it and nothing was done.
Right.
But somebody like this, the San Bernardino terrorist, the neighbors noticed a lot of activity going on around the house that didn't feel right. But they hesitated saying anything because
they didn't want to offend
anyone. Yes, they didn't want to offend and they didn't want to appear that they were racist.
Right.
So, you know, with political correctness, we just have to be really aware of what's important. And if you see something, you say something or do something.
Right. And you know what? I'd rather err on the safe side than not having profiled someone and then, you know, suffer the terrorism from them. So in other words, if someone behaves and looks like a terrorist to you or to the security people, yeah, what's to stop them from profiling? I mean, the thing is that if there's a chance that you're going to thwart a terrorist attack by profiling, I don't see anything wrong with that.
Exactly.
You know? Even if you pick the wrong person sometimes.
Exactly.
It's a small price to pay.
Sure. And, you know, people complain, well, you shouldn't be checking a child through the airport or somebody in a wheelchair.
Actually,
you
that would be
bet?
The easiest way.
Oh, you want to bet? In the book, we talk about how, unfortunately, a lot of terrorists recruit the little children. They'll throw you know, weapons on the child, or they'll do something horrible with somebody in a wheelchair or an
right.
elderly person, so or a hand disabled person. You know, we always have to be
right.
aware of everybody.
Assuming that they right. won't get checked as thoroughly.
Yeah.
Right. And there's been cases where the person doesn't even know, you know, like
exactly.
a tourist girlfriend or something, you know, they put stuff in her suitcase. She doesn't even know, and it's happened.
That's many cases
right.
like that. And, you know, and what's scary is these beautiful young women for 15 years old, 16, 17, they fall in love over the internet
yeah,
with an
yeah.
ISIS man
yeah.
and terrorist, and they fly to ISIS country, and lo and behold, after they're there, they go, oh my God, what did I do? I want to go back. And they're raped
right.
and killed, and it's horrible.
Right.
So, you know, it's such a scary world, and hopefully we've done something to at least open people's eyes.
Right. No, absolutely. So you guys can find out more in the body in the book Body Language of Terrorists. You can get it anywhere. You can also go to Lillian's website. It's drlillianglass.com. You can find out a lot more information, her previous books as well, Toxic People, and what others do you have
Body
here?
Language of Liars, He Says,
okay.
She Says. one of the idiot's guides to understanding men and women. Kinds
so
of.
18 books. It's a lot of books.
Wow. A lot of books.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't believe it myself. It's like, did I do that? I guess so.
It's very cool. So you must, so you've accomplished quite a bit in your life so far.
Yeah. I think so. And, I always believe in growing and learning and, helping people and educating and that's kind of like my mission. And I don't know what the future brings, but whatever it is, it'll be good for people.
Right. And very relevant, I think, to be aware of your surroundings. Now, if somebody observes like suspicious behavior or something, what should they do?
Great question. First of all, you want to go to authorities. You want to call the FBI or you want to call police department or just to let people be aware.
Yeah, or if you're at the airport, the TSA,
you would say something's a little off.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, sometimes, if you see something, there's nobody to call.
Right.
And you've got to do something. And that doing something, the best thing you can do is run.
Run.
Get away. I mean, there were five guys in Paris and they saw something odd on a train and, they took care of it, but they were in the military. We don't encourage that to people, but, sometimes you may have to.
Right.
So it's just
those were the American guys, right?
And in fact, in the Boston bombing, his older brother Tamerlan, he locked eyes with this guy named Jeff Bauman when he dropped his backpack, and they both looked at each other. And as he was looking at Jeff Bauman, who was just watching the race, his stomach just turned over. He thought something's wrong, and he just stood there. Unfortunately, he lost his legs. But somebody when you have that feeling, run, get away. So, maybe it would have spared his life, maybe not. But at least, there was something. Other people noticed something was wrong with these people, and they said nothing because they didn't know. Everybody's looking at the race. They're the only ones looking around at other people. That's not normal.
Right. Lillian, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Everybody check out our website again, drlillianglass.com. There's links to all the social media and everything, and you probably offer private services
And one of the things I offer that it's fun because people ask me, they sent me their photographs. So if you send me your video, your photograph, I'll tell you what's going on with you and your relationships and what your relationship is next to someone.
Oh, I want to try that.
Yeah, so just go to my website and I'll help you with that.
Sounds good.
Like I do with the celebrities.
All right. Well, much success to you with the book
and
everything.
Thank you so much.
Everybody go out and get this book. Sounds relevant and interesting and might just save your life. Thank you all for listening. Kelsey, thank you as well as always.
Have a great Thursday, guys.
Yes, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
Listening to Sam in the Morning with Kelsey only on LA Talk Radio.